Welcome back to the AEC Disruptors Podcast, your platform to help push the AEC industry forward. I'm your host, Christopher Dell, and joining me today is my co-host, Jackson Sinsat. What's going on, Jackson?
Nothing much, Christopher. Glad to be here for the season finale.
Oh, yeah. This was a great way to end the episode, or end the season, I would say. Our guest was Danielle O'Connell. She was the Director of Emerging Technology at Skanska. And the talk was sort of around this idea, or the beginning of this idea of digital twins from an owner perspective. We've had other guests talk about digital twins, but we look at from an owner perspective, it can be quite cumbersome. There's, you know, a long ways to go, and there's a lot to try to figure out. We talk about things like culture and even education, but I thought overall it was a good way to round out the season. We've had some really great guests, and this one starts to pull a lot of those other conversations together. What did you think about the chat?
I thought that this was, you know, kind of a perfect cherry on top for our season. You know, Danielle O'Connell has been a trailblazer in the industry. It's led her to be, you know, a director at Skanska, which, you know, I told my wife about the chat we had yesterday, and she doesn't know. She's not in, you know, the industry at all, and she knew who Skanska was. So what I really liked about it is we brought up digital twins, which I know has been talked about on previous seasons. And usually when you think of digital twins, it's really just for us in the AEC industry to help us, you know, build buildings better. But in reality, all of that data should be transferred over to the owner, and it should be accurate, and it should be a true representation of what their building is, you know, all the way down to the last bolt. So we talked about that a lot, as well as just the general culture of the industry, which has been also a theme this season. The theme was disruption towards the beginning of the season, and it's kind of transitioned into a little bit of culture as well, specifically around, you know, the relationship between, you know, architects and contractors. And she gave some great insight there. So I think it's going to be a great episode and a great into the season.
I would agree. There's a lot of talk or focus on the idea of the end user, somebody that perhaps when we're working, we may lose sight of, but it was a great end to the season. It was a great episode. We hope you get to listen to it and enjoy it. And that is a wrap. Check back for a new season. And always be on the lookout for new stuff from the AEC Disruptors. So joining us today is Danielle O'Connell, Director of Emerging Technology at Skanska. How are you doing, Danielle?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very good. Very good. So before we start, you know, we briefly met and we talked about this idea of digital twins from the owner perspective. Before we get going, I'd like to know a little bit about you, kind of what do you do at Skanska, and, you know, what made you want to come on and talk about this topic?
Okay, sure. Yeah. So I have been in this industry for 13, going on 14 years, in various roles really around technology, but I studied architecture in school, and I got out of school and I said, I think I need to go back to school to be a civil engineer so I can work in construction, because I had this passion for the built environment. And I loved just seeing buildings go up and learning all about that. So as I said, I started in more of like a pre-construction project coordination role, and I dabbled in all different parts of the building project. And then I got to be a BIM and VDC manager when they were just becoming a thing, which was really exciting. And we were, you know, trying to meet owner requirements. And at the time, and even still today, like, owners needed to be educated on what they were even asking for, right? Like, what is this 3D model going to do for me? And how am I going to use it? How are my teams going to use it? And so that's really, you know, where a lot of my passions lie. And it's just having grown up and been part of that and that evolution of BIM and VDC. And then now what has become really like this emerging tech space. And in this role that I'm in now. So while I'm passionate about, you know, building models, how we use models, like, how do we take that even further? How do we look at the things that we do every day, right? The RFI and the program management, the project management processes. How do we become more efficient by implementing technology or leveraging the model or laser scanning, or, you know, the list is really endless. But one thing I think that's been interesting and what brings me here is that, as I said before, like, there's this need to really educate the owners that we're working for. I think the requests for proposal are getting more complex. The owners' asks are getting more complex. So for us as builders to truly understand and truly understand how the owners are going to use that data at the end of the project is huge. And so we had a contact, we hosted Skanska recently, and I got to lead and moderate a panel with three amazing owners who talked a lot about this. And it was really enlightening to me about the things that they were focused on. And so I thought it would be a great discussion. There's so many opportunities to partner with our design teams, with even our subcontractors. We don't talk about that a lot, but I look for opportunities to do that as well. And really understand how this idea of digital twin can fit into this overall tech landscape as we're, you know, broadening our horizons. So that was a lot, but I think I covered it.
I'm really curious about, you being a BIM manager when, you know, BIM was first coming about, what kind of pushback you got, because there's still pushback, a few years ago, I was on a job that was exclusively paper drawings, and the only one who had access to a model was the architect. And that was because, you know, the people who I was with did not want to have the model. So what was that like?
It was interesting. I remember, so at the time we did a lot of like public K-12 type work too, where it's filed subbid. So looking at subcontractors who don't have maybe the modeling capabilities in house, I think it was enlightening in that our duct contractors is still today, were far ahead of us, as were our steel fabricators. But I remember there was this one project that I worked on that I'll give you as an example. It showed kind of where it is just diverse across the project. We were an IPD light project. We all lived in the same room for about 6 months. And we had our subs, we had our design team, structural engineer, our superintendents would visit. And our owner said to us, can we do our structural reviews electronically? And that was like, everyone's mind was blown. We had to set up work terminals in our structural engineer's office. We offered to do that in our architect's office. We had one on site. And our structural engineer was on board 100%. But our design team, our architect at the time was like, we should print out the drawings. We still want to do piece drawing review on paper. So we had, this very like tech advanced project owner, but yet we had different people even among our own team that wanted to do things different ways. And as you said, it's still a challenge. It's still like, it depends on who you're working with, where you're working. You're going to have contractors who are leaps and bounds ahead of others, right? And that's just the nature of the business. We have, clients who think it costs more to do BIM, right? But really, it's the way that we work now. But we even encounter architects sometimes that say, we're a CAD shop, we're a 2D shop. And I remember too, they may not be as prominent now, but I've seen a lot of new companies come out even during COVID that are helping support those like BIM and VDC efforts. So maybe it's not necessarily like just the modeling part of it now, but it's like looking at the 4D, 5D, all the D components that come after it, that the companies that are doing it just maybe don't have the bandwidth in house. I could talk for days about the different things that I've seen there.
It's interesting because I think it leads into this talk. When we set up the podcast way back when, we thought about having something that was applicable to all parties. But the owner perspective is one that we have probably neglected the most. And so I think that's what's interesting about, we keep pushing different technologies, maybe on one part of the industry. But at the end of the day, it always ends with the owner. One of our recent guests was Paul Wintour, and he put something on LinkedIn about, what is the ideal BIM workflow for you? And when you looked at all of the comments, a lot of the comments, mine included, all revolved around like, what is the owner asking for? The ideal process, no matter what we want to do, is what the owner wants. If the owner asks for, a level 500 model, that's what they're going to get. If they don't, if they ask for a 100, that's what they're going to get. So I think educating the owner is a smart thing. And it really comes from our side, because our side being the, maybe the AEC, not the O, because we are the ones that are actively trying to do it, because we're trying to make our own jobs a little more efficient or get a little better. So I think it's important. And I think it's an exciting conversation. When we first met, you mentioned when we were talking about how do we have this conversation with owners, and we started to look at the culture and how, you know, talk a little bit about that. When we're looking at, you know, I know we're doing it here at Applied Software, I'm sure Skanska is as well. We start to talk about being more innovative, looking at creating an innovative culture. How do you see that applying to the owner side, and is it relevant for helping, say, push the whole industry forward?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point, just about, you mentioned, like, we do the things that the owner asks us to do, but I think there's still part of that owner education there too. So I think one thing we can do is lead by example, right? So if they see, if our owners see things that we're doing as design teams, as contractors that are innovative or cutting edge or just creating more efficiencies, because at the end of the day, right, we're looking to save them costs and we're looking to save schedule on our project. So I think we do that, but I think we also look to see for them, like, what drives their business. And we heard a lot about this again from that owner panel I mentioned before, but they are so focused on, you know, it could be making money for their organization, but what I heard loud and clear from them was that they are focused so much on the end user, right? And I think we sometimes forget that, because we're trying to get out of there before the users are coming in, right? On any typical construction project. And even, you know, I'm thinking, like, post-construction, we've opened this beautiful space and we're trying to go in and get finished photos. And there's so much coordination that happens so that we can do that. Well, there's not a million people walking through the space and we're not, you know, invading privacy in any way. So I think it's just taking a different look at that. And I had this experience that when I worked for a tech company in Cambridge, and we built the space, and we actually got to sit in these comfortable loungy chairs and walk. And we watched these people as we opened the doors, like, walk through and experience the space. And that was, like, one of the most magical moments of my career. I remember them being like, oh, you know, like, and they're seeing it for the first time. They really didn't enter it throughout the entire project. And so I think, you know, being able to appreciate that end user side of things is going to help us to help our owners, right? And to help educate them. And there are going to be so many innovators. We find it at Skanska, like, there are innovators who came out of the woodwork during COVID. They were, you know, all over the place. People, you know, in such a big organization too, that you've never maybe even seen them or heard their name. And they had this idea that could just be scaled across the entire organization for us to address, like, what was happening. And I think owners can do that too. And they have the same type of people, I'm sure, amongst all of their, you know, their workforce. So I think we help, we encourage them, we teach them about the things that we're doing, what we're finding are successful, and help them to be innovative as well.
The end user component is something I think maybe on our side we lose sight of, because I did have a similar experience where we did a lot of worship spaces, and it would happen to be one of the churches we did was close to my family home. And so I attended a service one day, and seeing it through that perspective was totally different than, you know, when we're just building it, we're designing it, it's always empty and cold. But then seeing people actually using it, seeing people, you know, in that case, practice faith, it is a kind of an empowering thing for the designer to be able to see. I do think some of us are better than others at keeping the end user in mind, but I do think if we start to adapt for us to help the owner, maybe we need to take on what they do. And if their end goal is always the end user, I think that's important. And it kind of goes to maybe helping us as AEC professionals in our own culture, when we're trying to build our own innovative culture, thinking through, okay, well, ultimately we're trying to serve an owner who is trying to serve an end user. What do we need to instill in our own culture now that can carry through to the end? The idea of and we've talked about this on other podcasts, you know, you both are from the construction side, I'm from the design side now. It always seemed contentious. It still continues at times to seem contentious, yet for us to be able to help an owner, that relationship needs to be pretty cohesive, and we need to be able to work together in order to educate. Because if it's just the contractor educating the owner, the architect's going to have certain feelings or vice versa. You know, how do you think that part of the puzzle needs to fit together so that on our side, we are working together so that we can help push that owner forward so that they then can start to ask for more sophisticated things or do more sophisticated projects?
Yeah, I think that's a challenge in contractual language even right now. But what I'm hoping to see is that there's this whole, you know, everyone's focusing on data and data strategy, right? Like there's this need to share data across projects. And that could be data from models, that could be through our coordination process. But I think if we start to just talk to our partners in different ways, you know, not just through that contractual relationship with our owners, then we can leverage, like, we're probably trying to do the same thing, right? We're probably all, you know, have AR and VR headsets that we're trying to leverage. We're trying to figure out a way. And I think there's just so many opportunities if we just start talking to each other more that we can help. And contracts language aside, you know, and maybe that's part of the answer, is that we push for different contract language, right? Not every project's going to be IPD. You know, I've seen owners here who are really pushing the envelope when it comes to even CM at risk projects, where they're really, really encouraging that collaboration to happen early on, where the contractors brought on board, they want to build a relationship. But I think, yeah, more than anything, we can't just like operate in our vacuum. Like we're all, our end goal should all be the same. And maybe it's, I don't know what the name of a session is, but maybe that's something that we need to focus on more at the beginning of the project. Like I remember thinking throughout the project, like there was never, someone didn't come to me and share with me what the design intent was. And this is, I'm thinking back to when I was a BIM manager, even a project manager on site. If I took a minute to understand what the design intent was, I would have so much more appreciation for all the RFIs that I'm sending over to the design team. Like, answer this, this doesn't make sense. You know, like I think just there has to be that connection and that appreciation. And at the end of the day, it's just gonna help our owners be better and us to all build better buildings together, right? We're all going for that same end product.
The contract side I think is interesting because I feel like we keep adopting technologies, we're testing them out, we're doing whatever, but we always hit that one roadblock, which ends up being around the contract and around insurance. Because it's been almost 10 years now, believe it or not, I got a master's in building construction and facility management. And we talked a lot about IPD and how it was the future. But then we also talked about the issue with IPD is that we're running into contractual language problems. We're running into the insurance hasn't caught up. And so we had some of these things that maybe were outside of our control that were still driving forward. So does it, if we can't get around that right away, is it just building more trust between the contractor and the architect so that that is a more cohesive unit that then aids the owner?
That would be awesome. I think if, you know, if they're open to it, I'm seeing it a lot now, even where we have relationships with large firms who are coming in and presenting during some of our BD power hour, we call it, where we are educating anyone that will tune in to learn about what are the new norms that we're seeing in office space as we go back, right? As we go back to work. So I think there's those opportunities, they exist. It's just maybe we have to tap into different people. Maybe it's, you know, I think our project management teams from the construction side tend to do a really good job of building relationships with the people that they work with in the field. And some of us are removed from that. Like, you know, I think for me in my role, I touch a lot of different projects on the surface, but, and I have relationships with people within my organization, but I think if we could leverage some of those relationships that already exist and start to build that trust, that would have really helped. because we're going to be limited to our contracts for the foreseeable future, right? There's going to be a big push industry-wide to get those to be amended. So let's figure out another way to tap into what we already have.
Chris and I have talked a lot about the combative relationship between contractors and designers. I mean, we live it out every day doing this podcast together. Mm-hmm. You know, if we weren't thousands of miles away,
wouldn't be friends.
We wouldn't be friends. but I came from the subcontractor side. I did spend some time with the general contractor, but that was my internship and I mainly just picked up trash. I really
has to do it.
Yeah, exactly. But whenever I was with the subcontractor, I felt like there was a real disconnect. And for more context, I worked for a mechanical contractor. And I felt like there was a real disconnect between the subcontractors and the designers, and that the general contractor played kind of a middleman between the two. How do you think we can help break that down to where the subcontractors and the general contractors have a more direct relationship holistically with the design team?
Yeah, that's a great point. I was just talking to somebody about this last week. We as contractors, I don't think do a great job of, like, we obviously build relationships with ourselves, but for some reason, I don't think it's come to the point where we're like tapping into our subs for their expertise on even like this emerging tech scale, right? We know that they can build duct and they can figure out ways to be more efficient in the field, whether it's using a total station to lay out, whatever it is, right? But we're not, for some reason, I think we're missing the boat where we're connecting our subs to our design partners. And I think it's that same, you know, mutual respect. We have trusting relationships. We use a lot of the same subcontractors, like project after project, because we've built that relationship with them. And I think it's just being more inclusive. You know, I've seen like where we bring subcontractors on board for like design assist projects where that's been a little bit more successful. So maybe we treat each of our projects or each of our relationships as we do our design assist projects, because we're really relying on our subcontractors in that case for their expertise in a different way, right? And they have to work with the design team. Oftentimes they're stamping drawings that our subs are putting together. So maybe that's the approach. I don't know. I don't know if I have the answer, but I'd love to talk more about it, because I think it's hugely important and it's a myth.
Yeah, I feel like you could definitely do an entire podcast just on that subject itself. And you brought up design assist. You know, I was never on a design assist project, but it always felt like I was because of all of the extra work it felt like my detailers had to put in. And like I said, it felt like there was kind of a wall between us and the architect and engineer. Like, I never even saw the architect or engineer on my last project. Like, never saw him once face to face. It was all through, you know, the GC. So it's definitely a wall that it would be best to break it down.
Well, I think it goes to, you know, we're talking about how do we help the owner? And I think that starts with letting the expert be the expert. And I think it's really what you're talking about, Danielle, in that right now, I think we're still worried about liability and all sorts of different things that even on the design side, I mean, the contractors are excellent at managing a project. Yet on the design side, we will still try to reinvent the wheel on how to manage the exact same project, without trying to learn from the contractor on ways, even what technology do you use to manage? I mean, something as simple as that. So instead, we're too busy trying to reduce our liability, you know, not get sued, and, you know, find our place in the industry. And so as a result, we're not letting the expert be the expert. And I think for us to even get to where ultimately we are helping make a more sophisticated owner, it goes back to that very first thing we started talking about, was developing these innovative cultures. Well, part of that is this idea of continuous improvement and learning. And so for us to be able to help an owner, all of our side of the industry really needs to start to adopt that mantra of continuous improvement learning, and then sort of stepping outside and saying, okay, you're really good at this, and I'm going to let you do that.
The AEC Disruptors podcast is brought to you by Applied Software. With solutions for the modern project, Applied Software is on a mission to transform industries by empowering clients and champion innovation with real-world expert consultants. Their comprehensive array of solutions for the AEC, MEP, and manufacturing has a singular focus, helping you achieve higher performance. With software, training, support, consulting, and custom development, Applied Software has you covered. Visit ASTI.com and let them know we sent you.
I've said it on other podcasts that I'd always make the joke about if I'm designing a window detail and I didn't know what I was doing, is the guy that or girl that's going to install it really going to do it exactly how I drew it? Or are they going to do it how they've been doing it forever? You know, so why am I wasting the time, right?
We're going to write a confirming RFI. That's what we're going to do.
Right.
You know, so that type of stuff, I think, is if we were able to, and I think I even said when I was asked, like, what is the perfect workflow? It is one that allows those with the expertise to do what they are experts in. And that's simply that. You know, we're working to, if we're ultimately trying to help an owner learn how to get to a point where even they can deal with a digital twin. For instance, we've had guests come on and we've tried to define a digital twin. We, you know, I'm sure you and your firm and us here, we're all have our own definitions and own mantras for it. We're saying that to get there, it helps to have a culture that is sort of embracing this idea of continuous improvement, you know, innovative culture. We're starting to look a little bit at how the design professional and the construction professional need to be able to work together to be able to educate the owner. So we're still talking about education, but it all comes down to data, right? So we're all collecting all of this data. It's kind of data overload. Where do we start? I mean, there's a lot of owners that aren't even sophisticated enough to know what to do with it. It may not even be what they need. You know, we had, what is the definition of a digital twin? It's whatever the owner or whoever needs it to be. So where do we start?
Oof, that's a really, really heated question. I think I heard an interesting stat from Professor O'Day from Columbia University, and he said 95% of the data that we collect during a project is not used. That's huge, right? So that means that we think we're doing a really good job collecting all this data, and maybe we're collecting the right data for our processes and procedures, but we're not doing a great job in providing what the owner really needs to operate their facility. So I will say, in my experience, we don't maybe bring the right people to the table at the right time for those discussions. So oftentimes, you know, even when my team gets brought in for what we call enhanced turnover services, it's an afterthought, right? So we're not being brought in early enough to discuss with the teams that are going to operate those buildings, whether it's, you know, the facilities team, or someone that's going to take over once the building is open, what do you really need? And again, we keep talking about education, but we have to educate ourselves as well. We can't just be making guesses and saying, like, well, everyone needs a 3D representation of every piece of mechanical equipment, make, model, manufacture. Like, that's going to be what it is. We have to understand, are they using Maximo? Are they using AIM? Like, what is the system that they're using? And what's the kit of parts that they have? Like, we understand very well that we use Procore to do our RFIs, our submittals, our change orders, et cetera. But we don't maybe understand what their systems look like. And that could be cost systems. That could be, like I said, facilities management, CMMS type programs. We need to fully understand that. Also, like, who is going to be operating these types of digital twins, right? Whether that's 3D, 2D, whatever, just data. I think what we oftentimes find is that there might be a requirement for something 3D. It could be a Revit model. It could be like a Navisworks model, end of the project with a bunch of data linked to it. But there might not be one person in-house on the side of the owner that can even open it. So what are they going to do with that? So just understanding and like trying to bite off, I think, those little pieces will help us paint a full picture so that we can deliver something, and oftentimes probably going to help to define what the owner really needs. We're working on a project right now where we're trying to do that just internally with our commercial development partners and look at what does digital twin mean? And like you said, it's something different to each person we encounter. And there's so many different avenues we could go. And so I think we're gonna, our approach will be like to maybe like timeline it out and say within 6 months we could do this, or maybe during design we could do this, and during construction we could leverage digital twin this way, and then post construction we can leverage it these millions of ways. Did I answer your question? I think there's a lot.
Yeah, and it still goes to education, because you know we say 95% of the data doesn't get used. So does that mean 95% is wrong, or 95% doesn't know how to get used? Right. I think the idea of understanding sort of the owner's tech stack, I guess you could call it, is something I don't think a lot of people are talking about, because it's, you know, we're so focused on what is the product that we need to make us efficient, but we don't really think about the moment we hand it over, what does it get converted to? You know, what is it that they need? You know, so maybe it's, and is there, you know, is there a need to have some sort of industry standard requirement of what a certain model is? You know, what is the information that a healthcare professional uses? I worked at a firm that we managed all of the I think it was like standards of conditions or statement of conditions for healthcare life safety for a hospital system. And we, as the architect, helped manage it for them because they didn't have anyone on staff to do it. You know, so there could be whole professions that could come out of this, companies that just help owners manage digital twins. Because is it cost effective for an owner to have, you know, the technology license and train and take someone out of industry? Or do they form really good relationships with you all? And maybe you have a whole department at Skanska that all you do is it's FM, you know, and it just manages the stuff. And so it seems like when we have these conversations, really a lot of these conversations about how to make our industry more efficient, whatever, it all starts with this idea of education and communication. And it seems really simple, but understanding, you said in the very beginning, knowing what the end user needs to do. So if we know what the end user, who the end user is, then we know what the owner may need. They may not know what to ask for. And then you could backtrack from there, instead of we always just start right at the beginning with the blank sheet of paper and start laying out the floor plan. Let's think about the very end, not just in terms of what are the spatial requirements, what are everything else. What is it that they're going to need from a data perspective?
Right. And I think it's expanding that definition of owner to what I said earlier, but beyond who's the person that we sit across from at the OAC meeting. Now, who is it a student that uses that facility? Is it, you know, an airport where you have people from all over coming through, people from different countries? You need to consider different languages. Like, there's just so many things that we can consider, and I think make us all better if we do think about the owner as that broader owner, right?
I think it makes a lot of sense, because even internally we've talked about, okay, you know, there's a lot of firms that we all have heard digital twin. It's a buzzword now, but it seems scary. I don't know where to go. And I talked about this idea of like mapping it out from the very beginning of adopting a piece of technology all the way to having a fully operable digital twin. Now, where I stopped in that thought process was at the owner. I didn't think about the end user, but mapping that whole thing out. So it's like, okay, if this is your end goal, is to create a digital twin, well, first, what does that mean to you? Okay, what are all the steps you need to take? Because today, it may simply just be getting into like a 3D environment. That may be all it is. But understanding that that's step one to get to this ultimate goal of where you want to go. And I think for a lot of firms, whether they're even owners who are like, well, I'd love to have it, I don't know where to start. It's if we kind of map out the whole thing and understand, okay, well, what is it ultimately? What is the ideal state? What does that look like? And then what are some small incremental steps we can take today that help us build towards whatever that may be in the future?
Mm-hmm. I think that definition at the end state is that's where I'm actually intimidated, because I'm like, okay, there's 3D models, there's sensors, there's, you know, maybe there's rendered views, there's this, there's, I mean, the list is endless. So like, how do we hone in on what is actually the digital twin that makes sense to that, you know, specific client or owner?
Yeah, the last job I was on, we had a rule, and I really liked this rule. And it was, if it's not in the model and you're in the way of somebody who's in the model, you have to tear your stuff down. Because at the end of the day, what we wanted to provide was a true representation of what was going to really be there in real life in the model. And with the purpose of, you know, just making sure we're fully coordinated, everybody's prefabricating, you know, getting the building built as quickly as possible, but also the owner handover, because it was a fairly advanced owner. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, whenever you're trying to create this digital twin, the goal is, or a model-based digital twin, you know, taking as-builts from paper to the cloud, basically. The goal is to make it as easy as possible for the facilities manager. And the thing is, you know, you brought up, how early do we bring in the facilities manager in the process? Sometimes the owner doesn't even have that person hired until right before you get the certificate of occupancy. So they come in, they've got this nice, you know, clean new building, and you got to show them where all the shutoff valves are and, you know, where the air handlers are, things like that. So how can you build a model that is equipped to that facilities manager? Because at the end of the day, you know, the guy in the suit who's sitting across from you in the OIC meeting may not care where the shutoff valve is. It's going to be the facilities manager. So like, how do you create something that is tailored exclusively for them while the whole project, you're trying to create something that's tailored to, you know, getting the job built as quickly as possible, not as quickly as possible, but, you know, within budget, in schedule, things like that.
The end user may, it's, so there's an end user of the building. There's an end user for, say, the digital twin, and understanding both of their requirements and needs, I think, help. And so, like, you know, we have a lot of owners that know they should be doing this. They should be asking for this. They don't know where to go. You know, what would we say would be step one? What would be step one for an owner that is trying to step into this, you know, the new way of doing thing, emerging technologies? What should step one be?
Ooh, let's see. Step one should be, I think, just looking at their existing team and tech landscape, and truly understanding that, either that or understanding what the business needs are. And I mean business needs, like, what are the people entering that building? What do they need to accomplish for that, those end users? That would be what, I don't know. I'm kind of torn between those two, but maybe it's a combo.
I think based on everything I've heard, I think it starts with the end user still. You know, and I'm sure an owner, most owners, are thinking about their end user, but I think they're thinking at it again, mainly from a spatial requirement. Like, what do they need? We need, you know, 3 ICUs, and we need a bunch of prep rooms and some post-op. That's what we need. Okay. Well, what does that person actually need when they come in there? Okay. Well, they need, you know, this, this, and this, or they're going to have their data attached to them as an individual. Okay. Well, does that information, is there any importance of having that captured in conjunction with the building itself? Like, do we need to know so-and-so was a patient in this area, or is it currently a patient in this area? You know, I mean, right. Heaven forbid we saw something like the collapse of that condominium. If is having a digital twin and a better, and having more data on the end user and maybe location, does that help potentially? You know, I don't know. It seems like, yeah, I think the tech part is important, because you can't get there without understanding the technology. Documenting it. I mean, do we need to make sure we're documenting this information so that when we have conversations with our architects, our contractors, are we asking them? Or is it education?
Yeah, I guess like my head went in two ways. So I was thinking of a facilities team on a project that I was working on. And what I heard from them was like, nobody ever brought me into the meeting. They had a flood in a residential tower. And the at the end of the day, they found out that throughout the VE process, that which they were not a part of, and now they're the people that are running the building, they cut out shutoff valves under each sink in every residential unit. And so there was one master shutoff valve somewhere, you know, in the building, in the corridor. But there, you know, was a flood and it affected several floors because the water filled up on one and then trickled down. But had there been that discussion or, you know, the right person brought into the room for that, or maybe even a digital twin, that could have solved a huge issue, right? So I thought of them, and then I thought of the end user in a different way. So two different types of end users, but maybe equally as important.
So as we kind of wrap up, you know, again, we're the whole thing is we're starting to have these conversations about how do we help our owners embrace this idea of digital twin. And it seems like it really goes back to the very first thing we started talking about of education. And so, you know, as an industry, do we need to, we also talked about how we're all kind of sheltered in our own little vacuums. So do you feel like that is what's hindering us from being able to really help an owner? Do we need to break out of that? Do we need to have forums where architects and contractors can come together in sort of a non-contentious way and share best practices and share, you know, trade tips so that we can come to some level of consensus to then push that to the owner? Do you think that is an area that we should focus on so that when it comes time, we can help better educate what an owner should be asking for, what they should require?
Yeah, I think as you said that, I thought that maybe not just architects and contractors, but subcontractors. Let's bring everyone together. And I think, you know, one thing that I always have to consider is let's not implement technology for technology's sake, right? Let's all come together and talk through what we think is the problem that we're trying to solve, right? Why does anyone care? Why does an owner care? And I think we could come up with some things like Jackson's idea of the sensor that automatically shuts off the valve, because we don't want to risk losing, you know, finishes throughout an entire residential tower or, you know, several units stacked on top of each other. So I think we could do some sessions there that would help us to go to an owner with just better information, right? We've all collaborated. Now we have this really great idea of maybe what a digital twin could be and how it can help your benefit your business. And then let them tell us too. I think let's put some ideas in their heads of problems that we could solve with this digital twin perhaps. And we've all come together and come up with these great ideas and like, well, what do you think? And they might say, you're completely off your rockers. We don't agree with you. We don't know what you're talking about, or it doesn't solve our problems. But you know, maybe next step from that would be to then enlist our owner community and understand like what problems they need help solving that maybe a digital twin could solve, right? So I kind of see it as a two-step process.
How do we, you know, we get hung up on the cool, shiny toy, but at the end of the day, an owner has a job to do. They're either running a business, they're operating a facility, or they're just turning it over to somebody else. Educating them seems so critical. Otherwise, the three of us are kind of wasting our time by pursuing all these digital twins if at the end of the day, 95% doesn't get used. Right. And I guess maybe as a closing question, do you see, I mean, if we come together and we find out that the owners just don't see the same level of value, I mean, do you just give up on this digital twin journey, or is there still enough that as an organization you still benefit from?
I think there's still enough, but I don't want to get to where we were with like BIM4FM, I feel like was the first round of this, right? And so this is like digital twin is now, like you said, the new shiny object that we're trying to attack. But I think, you know, from what I've seen, I have a couple thoughts on this. We need to create something that is simple for either an owner and user to use. And I think that's important to every client we work with. And I think of it a lot like my phone and having one app where I can access a bunch of things when I'm a tenant of that space, right? And that could be what ends up being the digital twin. Well, that's the user interface of what's happening behind the scenes as a digital twin, right? So I think if we can almost like oversimplify the end user's, I guess, app, if you will, and focus on what we really need to get out of that twin, we could be successful. It just might not look like this like fancy model that you would spin on your phone. It just might be that like someone can, you know, call for their laundry or send it out, right? Or call for an Uber, like all from the same place. Or report, send in a work order ticket, right? When something's gone wrong. And again, I'll go back to the residential tower, but there's something wrong in their unit. They need help. They need the facilities team to address it. As long as I can do that all from one place, I think we could be successful. And again, it doesn't need to be that they need to like spin the model, understand. Maybe that's something the facilities team needs to do. Maybe they don't even want to do that. So I don't think we give up. I think we just look at maybe complexity, scale. I think there's opportunities to do things that are really simple, like for leasing, looking at this idea of digital twin in more like a virtual walkthrough experience with information tagged to it. Like that could be a digital twin, right? And then you get more complex as you go. So I'm not going to give up yet.
Danielle, I appreciate you joining us. We've enjoyed the chat.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Thanks for listening to the AEC Disruptors podcast. Enjoy this episode. Leave us a rating or review while sharing with your friends and coworkers. I'd love to hear from you. Send me a LinkedIn request or follow our LinkedIn page and let me know if there's a topic you'd like to hear. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks for listening. The AEC Disruptors is directed by Christopher Riddell, produced by Todd Wyant, edited by Eric Daniel, and co-hosted by Jackson Sensack. The AEC Disruptors is an Applied Software production, copyright Applied Software 2021.